Frank Muir goes into the environment and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Two little boys were paddling in the sea, and one said, "Come on, your feet dirty." And one said, "Yeah, well, we didn't have holiday last year, you see." Did you hear about the Irishman who applied for planning permission to move his house 4 feet so that he could take up the slack in his washing line?
Mummy, can I go into the sea for a swim?
No, dear, the sea's too dirty and polluted.
But Daddy's swimming.
He's insured. A prim young lady saw a young boy in the street with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. "Young man," she said, "do you know that smoking's a slow poison?" He said, "That's all right, I'm in no hurry." They were redrawing the border between Russia and Poland after one of their various wars, and a man came along with a pot of whitewash and a brush, painting the frontier line. Came to a house in the mountains between Poland and Russia, and the line would have gone smack through the centre of the house. So he knocked on the door, and this woman came to the door. She said, "Yes." She said, "I'm painting the new border line between Russia and Poland. Now then, I can't go through the house. Do you want the line which side? Do you want to be in Poland or Russia?" She said, "I'll ask my husband." She came, went out, came back a little while later, said, "We want to be in Poland." He said, "Right." And he drew the line around the house and put the house in Poland. He went up the mountain again, 5 miles up the road with his paintbrush, and he suddenly thought, "I wonder why." He walked back in. He said, "Excuse me, I was here a little while ago. When I asked you whether you wanted to be in Poland or Russia, you said Poland. Why?" He said, "My husband said he couldn't stand another Russian winter." A woman went to a fortune teller. She said, "Tell me, what does it mean if my hand itches?" He said, "Oh, that means you're going to have visitors." He said, "What does it mean if my head itches?" He said, "Oh, that means I've arrived." I had a friend once who lived in a house in a terrible position. There was a tannery to the east of the house, a piggery to the west, a glue factory to the north, and a refuse dump to the south. Mind you, he always knew which way the wind was blowing.
"Waiter, I must complain. The flies are thick in this place."
"What do you want, educated ones?" Terrible things, vermin, aren't they? Shocking things, vermin. Bloke went into a seaside hotel, booked a room, just about to sign the register, and a bed bug crawled across the page. He said, "That's it. I don't mind going to my room and finding a bug there, but when they come down to see what number you're going into," he said, "That's it." Two Irish builders were working on a house, and because it was in a beauty spot, the walls had to be weatherboarded with cedar planks. They were nailing the boards on the outside of the house, and one of them kept sorting through handfuls of nails and throwing about half of them away. "What are you doing, Pat?" he says. "Well, it is, Mike," he says, "some of these nails have got the point on the wrong end." He says, "Don't be stupid. Those are for the other side of the house."
Concern for the environment is currently a popular preoccupation. It's an attitude which has always, except for the earnest endeavours of a few individuals, been subject to the whims of fashion. Decades of apathy are suddenly overtaken by short bursts of enthusiasm for conservation, but then, too quickly, apathy takes over again. I suppose for much of the time, people are so preoccupied with other concerns that they don't have time to notice the world around them. They lose a lot by this. Honoré de Balzac:
"The love of nature is the only love that does not deceive human hopes."
But men find it easy to forget that fact. Ross Parmenter:
"In remaking the world in the likeness of a steam-heated, air-conditioned metropolis of apartment buildings, we have violated one of our essential attributes, our kinship with nature."
Nowadays, mankind has enormous technical facilities for changing the face of nature. Loudon Wainwright:
"The magnificence of mountains, the serenity of nature, nothing is safe from the idiot marks of man's passing."
One is nowadays more aware of the marks of man's passing in the country than in the city. The city has been taken over completely long ago, but new buildings and development in virgin country shows up worryingly. There's always, from classical times on, been a conflict between the attractions of town and country. Dr. Johnson:
"No wise man will go to live in the country unless he has something to do which can be better done in the country."
One can think of a few things. But nowadays, it's a trendy thing for city dwellers to move out of town to improve their quality of life. And some of them find that country ways are very different.
Jolly good. Now, you're probably all wondering who I am.
No.
Well, I'm Mr. Brightwell, and I bought this farm with lots of money. You do know money, do you? Well, I've bought this farm, and it seems that you three come with it. It's all down here somewhere. 300 chickens, pigs, 4 outhouses. Reuben, Dan, and Willem, that must be you. Well, from now onwards, I'm going to be in charge here, so if you have any little problems, do bring them along to me.
I'm service here. I'll take them boy down your 4-acre Stenchbury Way in a maidle.
Ah, maidle, piglet, Bessie's litter, Adam, crowd of trotter masters.
I'm awfully sorry, I didn't quite catch all
that. Reuben and Willem is the same as I wanted the piglets down the 4-acre, down her trotter, sir.
Oh, poor little thing. Will she have to be destroyed? I mean, she won't be much good for racing now, will she?
You've been a race with Grundle Spurdick, you Buddle Spurdick?
And let me faddle right up the barn on the end of
the
same as how you don't race pigs, sir.
Oh, don't you, Aaron? I won't be silly. I'm afraid I'm a bit ignorant in these matters.
Ignore him and buy him turtle more stooping out of pot McClute.
Reuben says as how he quite understands, sir, and you can rely on us.
I said, would you tell him I'm very grateful?
Master saying he's Trudel Grenell.
Him Grenell, him two cattle stinkle dens him, derm Grenell.
What did he do that for?
It is a sign of friendship, this part of the case.
Reuben.
Boy, the screaming burner right to be fast into Sweavely City Gurney.
Sweavely, Reuben, Sweavely, and Ban and Worthrop.
He didn't seem to like that.
He'll be all right, sir. He's just not used to strangers, sir. Now, would you like to give us our orders, sir?
Orders? Yes, orders. Well, I've written one or two little things down here I want you to do. I want you to mow the corn and shear the piglets. Well, that sort of thing, anyway. No? Well, what should we be doing on the farm this month? It is March, and that's got an R in it. I don't know if that's any sort of guide.
No.
Well, shouldn't you be spreading that stuff? Muck.
Oh, no, sir. Oh, no. We spread the potassium triphosphate nitroacetate, sir. I'm Boodle Sperm Doodle Fleet. He's Adam Harble Stenzer's mate.
Good God, what was that?
It is an old country saying, sir. When the soil's manganese beryllium ratio bait too great, spread the potassium triphosphate nitroacetate. Now, about the livestock, sir. You're going to milk the turnips and stack the chickens and plant the sheep, sir.
Oh, Spendy, well, you know where to find me if you need me.
Get wordled, you grebe old parrot.
Tarbert?
It is a term of affection, sir.
That is nice. I've only been here one day and you're already calling me an old Tarbert. I'm very, very flattered.
Yes, sir. Well, we'd best be going now, sir. If you want us, sir, we'll be down mucking out the pigsty. But if you come down there, you best wear your Wellington boots.
Wellington boots.
It is up to your ankles in Tarbert.
That was Chimbuck Taylor facing John Cleese, Graham Chapman and Marty Feldman. Love and respect for the country is expressed in the work of conservation groups who fight apathy and come up with useful environmental suggestions. From the Daily Mirror.
Why should the ingenious and often beautiful art of camouflage be confined to the uses of war? A gasworks need be no less efficient because it has the appearance from a distance of a beautiful forest.
Whoever wrote that never saw wartime camouflage, did they? Love of the countryside can also be expressed in the care of gardens, though this surprisingly sometimes has political overtones. A report from the Warrington Guardian.
Mr. John Dewes, Conservative Chairman of Runcorn Division, told the Young Conservatives on Monday, if a man has a tidy front garden, 9 times out of 10 he's a Conservative.
Conservation groups, too, sometimes have political axes to grind. Certainly in the view of the American John N. Mitchell.
The conservation movement is a breeding ground of communists and other subversives. We intend to clean them out, even if it means rounding up every bird watcher in the country.
Robert Dougal is a red. Nice thought, isn't it? Some observers just seem to be impervious to the charms of nature. Another sensitive American, Ronald Reagan.
If you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all.
And a report from The Motor.
If a driver chooses to spoil performance statistics by gazing at scenery, that's his own concern.
But this does not affect time-distance relationship, which is possible to one who regards natural scenery as an unnecessary excrescence.
Thank goodness there are still happy young couples who notice the world around them.
Ah, oh, I'd love to be alone in the country.
John?
Yes?
I'm with you.
I'd love to be alone in the country.
But, John, you brought me with you.
I didn't. You hid in the back.
But you must have noticed.
Not at all. It's a very large tandem.
But, John, when we fell off going down the stairs, you must have seen me.
I thought you were a hitchhiker.
But I'm your wife. You must have recognized me.
I didn't, Mary.
Why not?
Well, because you were disguised as a cactus.
Oh, John. John. Talk to me. Say something to me. Say you hate me. Say I'm ugly.
Which?
Say I'm ugly. You're only saying that. You don't really mean it. You don't care. You never think about me. Up and down all night, warming the milk, mashing the rusks, all the crying and the bedwetting.
Yes, I know.
I wouldn't mind if we had a baby.
Well, I'm sorry, but I prefer bisons.
Tom, why don't you admit it? You don't love me anymore.
All right, I admit it.
John, once we had something that was pure and wonderful and good. What's happened to it?
You've spent it all.
That's all that matters to you, isn't it? Money. I despise you. Do you hear me? I hate you. I don't know how I've been able to stand it. I suppose it's because I love you. I don't know. I do love you, John. I love you more than I can say. I need you, John. Please, John, don't look at photographs of nude women while I'm talking to you.
John Cleese and Joe Kendall. Perhaps the biggest challenge to our environment is man's developing technological ability. New ideas need resources and space, and don't necessarily improve the quality of life. J.B. Priestley.
We cannot get grace from gadgets. In the Bakelite house of the future, the dishes may not break, but the heart can. Even a man with 10 shower baths may find life stale, flattened, and profitable.
But for others, there are other priorities. Let's hear the views of Harley G. Waller, the president of the National Refractory and Brake Company.
If all these nature kooks had their way, America would still be a wilderness from coast to coast. Thank God there are at least a few businessmen who care about the gross national product.
It's one of the grossest national American products as businessmen. Fortunately, in most countries, there are strict controls on industrial development and all forms of building. But they're not always foolproof. From the News Chronicle.
Having been refused permission to build a house, the man applied for a license to build a farm building. This was granted. He then applied for permission to convert the building into a dwelling house. Yesterday, this was approved.
While we're in the area of planning permission, an anonymous limerick.
There was a young lady from Wantage, of whom the town clerk took advantage. Said the borough surveyor, indeed you must pay her, you've totally altered her frontage.
Any sort of building, environmentally acceptable or not, always attracts interest, particularly from the gawpers on the observation platform. So over to Salisbury Plain in Neolithic times.
Well, what's this then? You're not going to put up these great ugly stone blocks here, are you? You can't do that. I've got ancient lights on my cave. Well, what is it anyway? A henge? Well, what's a henge? Well, you may call it megalithic culture. I call it vandalism. I suppose you realise it's about the last nesting place for mammoths in the whole of Wessex. What with them building up the long barrows and the round barrows and the bell-shaped barrows. They started cutting out these white horses in the hillside now. Have you seen that? I don't know, it's some sort of ad for mead, I think. Yeah. They don't call them the beaker folk for nothing. And then you come dragging along these great prefabricated dominoes all over the roads. They're not meant for that sort of traffic. Every fine weekend it's the same story. Ox carts nose to tail all the way from here to the coast. I don't know where you get that stone from anyway. That's not local stone, I can tell. You get it from where? The Preseli Mountains? In Wales? I know it's in Wales. I've been abroad. What, do you want to bring it all out? Well, you're bringing it the wrong way anyway. You want to bring it round the Chanterbury Ring Road. Avoiding earthworks at Avebury. What a horrible-looking thing. Well, that's all there is to it. There's about just two up and one across the top, all the way round. Well, if that's modern architecture, roll on the Ice Age, I say. Well, you never get on a roof on it, for a start. Never get twigs big enough. We had a wood end here once, but it rotted. These big picture windows you got all the way round the bottom. Well, they look very nice, yes, I'll grant you, but what about the drafts? What about the lack of privacy? Who wants to live in a thing like that? Well, you tell me when they start moving in, won't you? You get a pretty rowdy crowd in some of these new developments. I don't want to end up under the altar stone in a crouching position. It's not going to be lived in. Well, that's something anyway. What is it then? So what? You're pulling a calendar? Well, it's a bit big for a calendar, isn't it? I mean, you look a bit silly with that on your desk, wouldn't you? Well, how'd you work it then? You come up here every morning before dawn. Well, better you than me, mate, yes. And when the rising sun throws the shadow of that big stone onto this flat one here, then we shall know if it's summer. Well, that will be very helpful, I must say. Is it summer? You can't tell. Well, I'd better come and help you shovel the snow off it then, hadn't I?
The ancient kibitzer was Michael Flanders. Man's record in his treatment of the countryside is not very impressive. Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
Everything is perfect coming from the hands of the Creator. Everything degenerates in the hands of man.
Some environmental crimes are just carelessness. If only people could be tidy. From the Bradford Telegraph.
Ilkley is having one of the most successful bank holidays for years. Crowds have left a trail of litter on the riverside and moors.
And an environmentally and politically explosive suggestion from a letter to the Liverpool Echo.
Citizens should not be expected to place litter in receptacles while there are unemployed who would be willing to sweep litter from the streets.
It's not just the ground that gets polluted, there's the air too. And this has been the case for a long time, if we're to believe this quotation from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
I durst not laugh for fear of opening my lips and receiving the bad air.
And more recently, a quote from Bob Sylvester.
I asked a coughing friend of mine why he doesn't stop smoking. In this town, it wouldn't do any good, he explained. I happen to be a chain breather.
Then there's the water, a lot of which is horribly polluted. Though it's getting better, if we are to believe this little thought from Geoffrey Bourne.
Rivers are getting cleaner. Happy days are here again.
The threat to our water is very serious. Not only to our drinking water, but to our seas. Some of the trouble is environmental pollution, some political. A top secret report from the Teignmouth Post.
The fishery officer reported that Devon's coastal waters have been experiencing the greatest invasion of octopuses for at least 50 years. It was passed on to him by a fisherman in a small Devon port that the reason for the invasion was that Russian trawlers which visited the area some time ago were fitted with tanks containing octopuses, and these were released in the channel near the coast.
You don't understand a lobster being part of the Red Menace, but not an octopus, surely. Obviously, the message is, whenever you're dealing with water, beware of pollution.
American city, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons are being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air, and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink, the breakfast garbage that you throw into the bay. They drink at lunch in San Jose. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
Tom Lehrer. Everywhere we seem to be beleaguered with threats of pollution. A report on vermin from the Ipswich Evening Star.
Mr. C.J. Clark spoke of thousands of rats at Blythburgh, which he said could be seen sitting on the curbs and laughing at people. They now have taken a dislike to the village constable and were eating their way into his back door.
It's in the paper. News of the threats from chemical waste in the Widnes Weekly News.
Councillor R. Illidge, criticising the action of the Highways Committee at the Widnes Town Council meeting on Tuesday night, said, I think we're stifling initiative here in refusing an application from a local firm to pump waste acid over a public footpath.
If you happen to miss these disasters, there's always the cheering prospect that another supertanker will run aground and bathe our shores with oil. Do you remember the Towie Canyon? Here's a letter to the Daily Telegraph.
Sir, my brother and his wife have just returned from a holiday in Guernsey. There, the bit of oil left from the Torrey Canyon is a tourist attraction. People go to see it, peer at it, poke it, and spoon it into plastic bags to take home as souvenirs. It makes their holiday. If people don't go to Cornwall quickly, there'll be none left to see.
To go, then. Then, of course, there is the greatest threat of all to the environment, that of nuclear war. Mind you, even in that event, there are things you can do.
Now, at this point, I'll throw the whole thing at you, if you're worried or if you've got any questions about civil defence. Let's hear about them.
The question over there, I think. The question up there, I think. Oh, dear, we'll have to pick this one.
Yes? Following the nuclear holocaust, could you tell me when normal public services would be resumed?
Your opinion? Very fair question. We have got it in hand, of course. Following Armageddon, we do hope to have normal public services working fairly smoothly pretty soon after the event. But I feel, in all fairness, I ought to point out that it must needs be something in the nature of a skeleton service.
Now, what can we do from a practical point of view in the event of a nuclear attack? Well, the first golden rule to remember about hydrogen warfare is to be out of the area where the attack is about to occur. Get right out of that area, because that's the danger area where the bombs are dropping. Get right out of it. If you're out of it, you're well out of it. If you're in it, you're really in it. If you are caught in it when the bomb drops, for goodness sake, don't move. Stand absolutely stock still. Not under a tree, of course, that could be extremely dangerous. All about radiation. I hear a strangled cry. Well, there is a lot you can do about radiation, you know. As soon as the dust has settled, the best thing you can do is hold your breath and jump into a brown paper bag. Having a good old brown paper for protecting you. So that's the rule. The bomb drops, the dust settles, hold your breath, jump into a brown paper bag, and Bob belongs your local civil defence leader.
And he'll tell you exactly what you can do.
It was a bit from Beyond the Fringe with Alan Bennett, Peter Cook, Jonathan Miller and Dudley Moore. Even without something as dramatic as a nuclear holocaust, some experts believe man is seeking his own destruction by exhausting the Earth's resources. Norbert Wiener.
The more we get out of the world, the less we leave, and in the long run, we shall have to pay our debts at a time that may be very inconvenient for our own survival.
It all gets very depressing if you think too much about pollution. You can even get suicidal. An item from the Eastbourne Herald.
The town clerk reported to the Downs Preservation Committee on an interview with the Reverend R.Q. Nelson regarding his suggestion that notices should be erected on Beachy Head designed to dissuade from suicide persons who might be contemplating it. The committee recommended that the town clerk obtain specialist advice as to whether such notices are likely to achieve their object.
You don't want to spoil the Downs, you know. It only stops a few people from jumping. Actually, no, we must preserve our environment, keep it unsullied, unpolluted, see that it doesn't get spoiled by chemicals or burnt. Fortunately, we have an organisation to watch for fire. A report from the Kentish Times.
On Thursday last week, Mr. F.A. Ruler, Secretary of Hayes Village, said, "Are you aware that West Wickham Fire Station is situated in a road which is blocked at both ends?"
Yes, let us give... Anyway, let's give thanks for that defender of the environment, the fire engine.
Listen to this. Listen to this. I was watching one night the, Ed Sullivan show, and Sullivan had on a hypnotist called the great Ronaldo. And Ronaldo got four guys out of the audience, and he hypnotized them. And he said to them, "You think you're a fire engine." And I'm home watching, and I get drowsy, and I fall asleep. And I wake up an hour later, I turn the set off, and suddenly I'm seized with an uncontrollable impulse to dress up in my red flannel underwear, which I do when I'm looking at myself in the mirror. And suddenly the phone rings, I burst out the front door and start running down Fifth Avenue fast, making a siren noise. At 14th Street, I hit a guy at an intersection who was also wearing red flannel underwear. He decided to work his one truck. We start running down to the village. Suddenly, two guys in red flannel underwear pass us, running up town. We figure they must know where the fire is. We turn and follow. At 86th Street, a cop flags us down because there's four guys in red flannel underwear running up the street. He says, "You're coming down to headquarters, get into the car." And I start giggling hysterically because this jerk is trying to get a fire engine into a lousy little Chevy.
Woody Allen. Let's just have one more thought on the environment before we leave you. This one, surprisingly, is from Playboy magazine.
The giant chicken-eating frog will soon be extinct unless we take action now. So for God's sake, let's not do anything.
Next week, we'll be looking at the army. Until then, from Alfred and me, goodbye.
I say you're not leaving that script lying about, are you?
I'm going to put it in the rubbish bin.
All right, then.
Frank Muir Goes Into the Environment was produced by Simon Brett.